You are listening to the Midcurrent Church Podcast. Today's message is week one of our sermon series, Cut It Out, Creating Space for God. For more information and to visit us online, check out midcurrentchurch.org and find us on Facebook and Instagram. And now, here is Pastor Sten Carlson with today's message.
Hey, Midcurrent, happy new year to you. My name is Sten, and I'm the lead pastor here, and honestly, I'm so happy to have you here with us today. I brought something up here with me. I'm wondering if anybody can tell me what it is. Anybody? Tape measure. There we go. From the very moment that any of us enter into this world, we are placed alongside something that looks a whole lot like this, and we are given a measurement. After our name, one of the first pieces of information about us that is plastered all over Facebook is how tall we are and how much we weigh. I can vividly remember how excited I was to record, to learn about each of my three kids' measurements not long after they were born. And what's interesting is that these kind of measurements, they don't just stop right then and there at birth. With each new year and with each new doctor's appointment, our height and our weight and the size of our head is measured again and again and again and put on a chart that measures each of us now in comparison to all the other kids our age. And still, it doesn't even stop there. The measurements never stop. That this little measuring stick, it follows us everywhere we go in life. We measure and we track and we compare the ages that our kids hit certain milestones like walking or talking. And then we measure the age at which they start reading or writing. And then we start to measure their athletic ability or their artistic ability or maybe their test scores. Then we start to measure their GPA and then their resume. And then we start to measure job performances. And then we start to measure titles, and then we start to compare salaries and houses and backyards and bank accounts and retirement funds. And the truth is, this world never stops measuring us. The reality is, if you're honest, you never stop measuring you, and you never stop comparing you to all of the yous next to you. Now, some of you are maybe okay with that because you might be pretty satisfied. You're maybe very confident in all of the things that measure you, your test scores or your athletic ability or your job performance or maybe your career accomplishments. But most of us, on the other hand, I would say, are probably more so a little uneasy about the ever-measuring world that we are a part of. Most of us, I'm guessing, are pretty uneasy because if we're honest, we're never sure. We've never felt like our GPA or our job or our house or our car, we've never felt like it was as good as our neighbor across the street, or maybe we've never felt like it was as good as even our friends a few rows over in church. You don't have to raise your hand for this one, but do you ever feel like you don't measure up? Maybe you don't feel like you measure up as a man or as a woman, or maybe you don't feel like you don't measure up as a husband or as a wife, or maybe as a son or daughter. Maybe you don't feel like you measure up as a student or an employee or as a friend, or maybe you don't feel like you measure up as a Jesus follower. I can see a handful of brave heads nodding slightly, but either way, I would guess, if I had to, I would guess that more of us than not feel this way. In fact, I asked a handful of people over the past couple of weeks, what were some of the biggest distractions? What are some of the biggest hindrances to their spiritual life? And the top answer that I heard as I reached out in a few different directions, the top answer that I heard, biggest distractions, biggest hindrances to spiritual life, top answer I heard was comparison. It's typically comparison. It's typically the only way. It's the only way. It's the only method that we know in terms of determining our status. It's the only way we know, to determine how it is or where it is we stand or how we measure up. And the truth is, as long as something like this, this kind of measuring tape or measuring stick, as long as this measures everything that we do against everyone else in the world around us, my guess is that most of us will continually fall into the comparison trap. It's a trap because comparison really only leads to two things. It leads to pride or it leads to insecurity. Right? When we compare ourselves to our friends and our neighbors on our left and on our right, we either feel superior or we feel inferior. And here's what we got to know. Neither honors God. Neither one honors God. Comparison is just a nasty cycle. When we go, yikes, they're pretty good, but phew, at least we're better than them. And around we go in the circle, to our left and our right. Around and around we go, never sure where we stand, never exactly sure if we measure up, and if we're honest, never really feeling great about ourselves, no matter who it is that we compare ourselves to. And so this is a little bit of what I want to talk about today in the very first week of our new message series called Cut It Out. See, January is often the time of year for many of us when we cut out all of the foods and we try to cut out all of the bad habits that prevent us from the healthy life that we desire. And this is a great way to start the new year. But what I would suggest for you and for me is that we also take the same approach to our faith and to our spiritual life. And so for the next 4 weeks, we are going to talk about some of the things that I think we need to cut out of our lives so that there is more space for God and for the things of God. And so today, as we kick off this series, we're gonna be talking about how we need to cut comparison out of our lives so that we can experience life as God really intended. And so the question, or the questions, I should say, that we need to start to answer are questions like this. How do I measure myself? How do I measure whether I'm killing it or not? What measuring stick do I even use? Do I look around me? Do I look at my parents or my siblings or my friends? Do I measure myself against my heathen neighbors who don't even go to church? Or do I measure myself against my, coworker who tells dirty jokes and fudges the numbers on his sales report? Is that who I compare myself to? Is that who I measure myself against? We've got to come to the conclusion once and for all as to whether or not others in our life are the right measuring stick for determining our status in this world, and more importantly, our status with God. And so if you want to know where your status in this life really comes from, if you want to know the right way and the wrong way to measure yourself, then this is a perfect Sunday to be here with us at Midcurrent, because we are going to read a story, part of a story from the New Testament that I think is going to help us see exactly what it is that determines the status that we very well may desire. And so if you would, turn your attention to me with Luke, to Luke chapter 18. The book of Luke is one of the four books that we refer to in the New Testament as the Gospels. The Gospels are just letters that were written by four different guys who followed Jesus and who traveled with Jesus and wrote about what they saw and what they experienced. And at this time that Luke was, following Jesus, Jesus must have been concerned with how people were measuring themselves and evaluating themselves in that day, because he discusses the whole concept head on. And here's what Luke writes. This is what he recorded starting in verse 9. To some who were confident in their own righteousness and who also looked down on everyone else, Jesus told this parable. Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. Now, let me pause here for just a second. Reading this 2,000 years later gives us a little bit of an advantage. Scholars have studied these writings and this culture extensively. So 2,000 years later, we have a little bit more of the inside scoop, to know that these Pharisees, although they were highly respected, we kind of know now that they were maybe a little misguided at times. They could be hypocritical. And we also know that tax collectors who were, looked on very poorly, we also know that they weren't always as bad as they were made out to be. But in that day, they didn't have the luxury. They didn't have history and they didn't have hindsight on their side. What they saw was kind of what they got. And in that day, it was universally understood that Pharisees were the top dogs, especially in the religious world. They were a highly respected group. If your daughter brought a guy home to meet the family, you just prayed that it was someone as respectable as a Pharisee. A tax collector, on the other hand, this is the kind of guy that a dad would meet on the front porch with a shotgun saying like, "You stay away from my daughter." Okay, so in order for us to grasp the full weight of this story that Jesus is teaching, this parable, we know some things now that they didn't know totally back then. Not as great, not as bad. We kind of know that. So in order for us to understand the story, we have to kind of put on our first century lenses to be aware of how these two were regarded in society. Pharisees, cream of the crop, tax collector, lowly bottom feeder. And so Jesus tells this parable, this story, that these two men came to the temple to pray. Verse 11 continues like this. The Pharisee stood by himself and prayed, "God, I thank you that I'm not like other people, robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even like this tax collector." Let me stop quickly here. Let's identify something. What measuring stick is he using? Others. Okay. And not just any other, right? The bottom of the barrel kind of others. On top of that, he goes on to say this. He goes on to kind of boast about himself. Verse 12, "I fast twice a week and I give a tenth of all that I get." It's very impressive. But just because he stood by himself, it doesn't mean that he prayed to himself. He's praying out loud. And so it kind of feels like he's using his prayer to pass on some unsolicited advice to the lowly tax collector to his left. Like, hint, hint, wink, wink, tax collector guy, check me out. Maybe someday you will be as great as me. Don't you love the prayer out loud that's really kind of like sending a secret message to someone down the line? This prayer, if you think about it, this prayer very clearly seems like it was directed more so down the line than it was up to God. And then in contrast, the very next verse shows the prayer of the lowly tax collector. Here's verse 13. "But the tax collector stood at a distance. He would not even look up to heaven, but he beat his chest and he said, 'God, have mercy on me, a sinner.'" Now, I want you to notice something here. Okay, yes, in the text, it says the tax collector didn't even look up to heaven. But here's what I want you to notice. Here's what I want you to recognize as well. He didn't look over either. His evaluation of himself in that moment, it had nothing to do with the Pharisee that was standing next to him, had nothing to do with how he felt like he did or didn't measure up to the standard or to the status of this respectable religious leader there in the temple with him. His only evaluation of himself was in relationship to God. And look at how this turns out. Look at how Jesus concludes this story. He says this, "I tell you," Jesus tells the group of listeners, he says, "I tell you that this man, the tax collector, rather than the other man, the Pharisee, went home justified." before God. I tell you, this man went home justified before God. Folks, here's what I want to share with you today, especially for those of you who either feel the weight and feel the burden of comparison, or those of you who might just acknowledge, if you're honest, for those of you who might just admit that you spend far too much time and too much energy comparing yourself to those around you. Here's what I think we learned from Jesus. The only status that matters is the one that only God can give. That's what we have to understand. The only status in this life, in this world, that's worth measuring, that's worth paying attention to, the only status that matters is the one that only God can give to us. The tax collector, he's society's worst in comparison to everyone else. He went home justified. He went home kind of lifted up, not the impressive Pharisee who was society's best in comparison to everyone else. The conclusion of this story, it would have sent shockwaves throughout the entire community, throughout the entire audience listening to Jesus teach. It was the tax collector that went home right and honored and highlighted and applauded and celebrated and lifted up in God's eyes. How is that possible? Here's how. He chose not to measure himself. He chose not to measure himself and to evaluate his worth and to determine his value and to determine his status. He chose not to measure any of that in relationship to other people. But rather, he chose to measure and evaluate his status solely in relationship to God. He wasn't trying to be something or aspire to something that he was not. I love the way the Message translation of the Bible paraphrases this last verse. It says it like this: if you walk around with your nose in the air, you're going to end up flat on your face. But if you're content to be simply yourself, you will become more than yourself. I like that. If you're content to be simply yourself, if you're content to be nothing other than who God created you to be, if you understand that who you are has nothing to do with who anyone else is or what anyone else does or what everyone else has, then the sky is the limit. Greatness in God's economy is possible for you. You just have to understand that the only status that matters is the one that only God can give to you. What counts, friends, what counts is a heart that appreciates A, what God has created, and B, what He alone can give. That's what counts. It's not a track record. It's not our resume. It's not a head-to-head, comparison to another neighbor or to another friend or to a coworker or a teammate or fill in the blank for whoever it is for you. It's not a head-to-head comparison. And not only is a head-to-head comparison not what counts, but it's also what will kill whatever is of value inside of you. Let me say that again. Not only is a head-to-head comparison not what counts, but it is what will kill whatever is of value inside of you. I think it's Pastor Craig Groeschel who has been known to say something along the lines of this, that the quickest way to kill something special is to compare it to something else. Friends, when we choose to measure ourselves alongside whoever is on our right and whoever is on our left, I think after reading this story, I think it's clear that we will always walk away empty-handed. We'll always walk away feeling kind of empty because, as I said before, we'll either feel superior or we'll feel inferior, and neither one is honoring to God. What is honoring to God, what God does respond to, is the one who in humility takes a sober look at where he or she stands, never forgetting that the standard of comparison is the character of God himself. Never forgetting that God himself is the only one who can give us the satisfaction, the wholeness, the fullness that we are looking for. So here's my invitation to all of us. Let's cut comparison to anyone else in our life. Let's cut that out of our life this year. Let's cut it out of our life for good. And if that's going to happen, that's my invitation. Let's cut comparison out of our spiritual lives. If that's going to happen, then we have to be honest with ourselves and try to identify where it is and to who it is that we compare ourselves most often. And at the end of the day, only you know who that is for you, but it might be, I don't know, it might be the mom or the dad who looks like they have it all together, or who looks like they have all the things that you want, or it might be the family across the street or across the lobby in church who you think should be looking up to you. Might be, you know, a friend of yours and the job or the gifts or the talents or the, you know, the wardrobe that they have that you wish you had. It might be a teammate, or it might be a classmate. It might be a colleague. It might even be a role model that you would admit that you compare yourself to. I've got a lot of pastors that I look up to and that I'm encouraged by and that I follow online. But if I'm not careful, encouragement by them, thinking, man, I like these pastors. If I'm not careful, encouragement from them slowly drifts and slowly turns into comparison of them. And eventually it's no longer encouragement that I'm feeling. Eventually it's like, ooh, wow, I'm not as good as I thought I was. So we got to decide where it is and to who it is we compare ourselves to. I'm not saying that we can't learn from others. I'm not saying that we shouldn't be encouraged by others or aspire to replicate traits we see in them. The Bible tells us even that iron sharpens iron. So we can be challenged by them. We can be encouraged by them. We just have to decide for ourselves that we will not let our stock rise or fall in comparison to them. We have to decide that our stock is not going to rise or fall based on our comparison to anyone else in our life, anyone to our left, anyone to our right, because that is a game that we simply will not win. And so we've got to cut comparison out of our life once and for all. We've got to understand that the only status that matters is the one that only God can give. And there is no greater illustration of that, in my mind, than the children's book, You Are Special. Now, I threw the cover up on the screen because my family reads this book so much that the cover is gone. If you've never read the book before, I want to give you a summary of it here today because of how much I think it perfectly illustrates what I'm getting at. The story is about a bunch of wooden people called Wemmicks that are carved by a woodworker named Eli. And each Wemmick is given a box of gold star stickers and also a box of gray dot stickers that they are to give out to one another. The pretty and the talented and the athletic and the artistic Wemmicks would be given golden star stickers by all the other Wemmicks. The Wemmicks that, you know, maybe looked funny or were too tall or too short or too clumsy or whose paint was starting to chip, they would be given gray dot stickers. And one of the Wemmicks who got a ton of gray dot stickers was a Wemmick by the name of Punchinello. He looked a little funny and got gray dots for that. And he tried to jump high like all of the other Wemmicks, but he would fall. And so the other Wemmicks would give him a bunch of gray dots. And then he would try to explain, you know, why it is he fell. And he would stumble over his words and he would end up saying something kind of silly and something kind of embarrassing. And so he'd get even more gray dots. And soon he had so many gray dots that all of the other Wemmicks started to talk about him and laugh at him. And after a while, Punchinello either hung out by himself or with other Wemmicks who had gray dots also because he felt better around them. One day, Punchinello met a Wemmick named Lucia, and she didn't have any dots and she didn't have any stars. Some tried to give her stars because she had no dots, but the stars fell off. When others saw that she had no stars, they would give her gray dots, but those wouldn't stick either. And Punchinello wanted to be like that. He wanted to be like Lucia. And so he asked her, "How do you do it? How do you do it?" And Lucia said, "It's easy. Every day I go visit Eli, the woodcarver." And she told Punchinello he should do the same. So one day Punchinello, he went to visit Eli, and Eli noticed that Punchinello had been given some bad marks. He noticed the gray dots, and immediately Punchinello, started to try to explain himself, and Eli stopped him and said, "Punchinello, I don't care what the other Wemmicks think, and you shouldn't either." He said, "What they think doesn't matter. All that matters is what I think. And I think you are pretty special." This was encouraging, but also a little shocking, a little surprising to Punchinello. And soon he wanted to know more about Lucia. He wanted to know why the stickers didn't stick to her. And so Eli told him it's because she decided that what Eli thinks is more important than what all of the other Wemmicks think. That she visits Eli every day and that Punchinello needs to do the same so that he would learn how much Eli cared for him. The story ends with Eli reminding Punchinello before he leaves that he is special because Eli made him. Punchinello walked out of the wood shop. He thought to himself, "I think Eli really means it." And as he did, the story says, a gray dot fell to the ground. Mid-Current Church, the only status that matters, the only status worth measuring, the only thing in our life that's worth paying attention to, the only recognition, the only assurance worth reaching for is the one that only God can give to you and to me. So by all means, find a role model, follow the example of someone who's living a life that you aspire to live, yes, but cut comparison out of your life this year so that there is more space to be in the presence of God, so there is more space to hear the voice of God, because it is in God's presence only that we will find the worth and the value and the validation and the assurance and the confidence that we long for. Let me pray for us. God, we give you thanks for a brand new year. We give you thanks for a brand new start at so many things, God, a brand new start at life and faith and family and the whole deal, God. We're grateful that these kind of opportunities provide us an encouraging sense of a brand new start, God. And there's so many areas of our life that we want to take advantage of that we want to start doing things the right way, God. And I pray that each of us here, to some degree, God, I know we're all at different stages of faith and spiritual life, and that's fine, God, but I pray that all of us here would have a sense that we want something new, something fresh for our faith and for our spiritual life this year. So God, as we move into a new year, would you help us to begin cutting out of our lives the things that are gonna stand in our way of experiencing you more and hearing your voice more in our life, God. And for any of us here who struggle with or who feel the weight or who feel the burden of comparison, God, I pray that this would be our first order to cut comparison out of our life so that it would be your evaluation, God, your voice that is the only one that matters in our life. God, we thank you. We thank you that we were fearfully and wonderfully made by you. We're grateful, God, that you created us for a purpose, that you've got a future and a plan for us. God, help us turn our eyes and our hearts to you so that we might experience more of it. And we pray these things in the name of your son, Jesus.
Thank you for listening to this week's message from Midcurrent Church. For more information and to visit us online, check out midcurrentchurch.org and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Midcurrent Church is located at 200 First Street in downtown Hudson, Wisconsin. Be sure to join us on Sunday mornings, both online and in person at 9 and 10:30 a.m.